And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today, we have another dad, Adam Khoury.
Thanks for having me today, Bill.
And our special guest today is Jennifer Fink. We're crossing to Wisconsin in the United States to speak to Jennifer, who is a freelance writer. She's a registered nurse, importantly, a mother of four boys, and the founder in 2013 of the organization buildingboys.net. Jennifer has been a married parent. She's been a single parent. Her Parents Magazine article, Help Your Son Succeed in School, won the American Society of Journalists and Authors 2012 Outstanding Article Award in the service category. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
So, Jennifer, school is a big part of a boy's life in our society. And you asked the question, are boys failing school or is school failing our boys?
Mm-hmm.
Are boys, in fact, failing at school? Is that your experience?
Well, statistically speaking, the numbers indicate that boys are not doing as well in school as girls. And that's true here in the States. It's true there in Australia. And internationally, boys are lagging behind girls in reading, in measures of writing. Even, I believe, in math, boys are starting to fall behind. And that's been an area where boys have traditionally had higher scores than females. And furthermore, boys are more likely to have negative experiences with school. They're more likely to be referred for disciplinary issues. They are more likely to fail classes, to be expelled, or to be suspended.
And do you see that as a failing of the boys or of the schools themselves?
You know, certainly, I'm sure there's some of each. Anybody who is listening and has boys certainly knows that boys are mischievous and boys, just like girls, can get in trouble and make poor choices as well. But something that has happened in the last 20, 30 years is school has become very much, even more so than it was, a sit-down, be quiet, learn kind of place. And we are asking children at ever younger ages to do more academic book work, to write, to read. So whereas when I was a kid, that was, you know, standard for when you were about 6 years old, it's being pushed down to five and it's being pushed down to four. And that's a big problem, particularly because when it comes to development, boys tend to develop fine motor skills. So the skills used for writing, for instance, later than gross motor skills, the skills used for kicking a ball or running. Writing is dependent on fine motor skills. The part of the brain that handles language matures on average later in boys than it does in girls. Both boys and girls get to the same place eventually, but it happens later in boys. So part of the problem is you have little boys who are physically and developmentally not ready for the things they are being asked in school. They don't do as well at writing or reading as they would like, as they know their teachers would like, as their parents would like. And they start to feel like failures. And more importantly, they feel like this whole school thing is not for me.
And there are some simple things that could be done to improve that balance. I think you talk about the importance of recess.
Indeed. That's another thing that has happened. In so many places, recess has been cut or eliminated. It goes against common sense in many cases. It goes against good research. Boys and girls need that time to move. They need it to burn off excess energy. But even more than that, studies have shown that when movement is part of the day and when movement is part of learning, you learn better. Not to mention the fact that during free play is when kids learn a lot of their social emotional skills, how to relate to others, how to problem solve. They experiment with language. They experiment with conflict resolution. All of these are important and essential skills. The good news is that increasingly there are people who are realizing this. Just recently here in the States, I saw an article about a school in Texas, and they actually increased the amount of recess time and found that student academic achievement and student overall well-being improved. So I hope we see more of that.
It's a little bit different in the United States, in some parts of the states anyway, and I'm thinking of Wisconsin where you are, but in Australia, when it's recess time, you can always go outside and play in the sunshine. Even in winter, it's usually sunny enough and warm enough to go and play outside. There is a physical problem in the States if the playground is completely covered in snow, though, isn't there? How do you get over that?
You know, it is used as an excuse often, but if you look around the world, particularly in the Scandinavian countries, they routinely, the children go outside no matter the weather. So unlike a lot of Australians, my kids live in a place where we get snow. They have snow gear. They have the appropriate clothing. They would love to go outside for a little bit of time sometimes. Sometimes it's an issue of, I think the teachers don't want to go outside to supervise recess. Sometimes it is a legitimate safety concern. Sometimes it gets cold enough here that it's really not safe to be out for an extended period. And I understand schools not wanting to take responsibility for that. If students can't go outside for whatever reason, I still think they need opportunities for free play and lots of movement in school. And that becomes a problem.
And that raises the more general issue that schools are afraid of liability issues, that a child may injure himself, a boy may injure himself playing on perhaps some equipment or climbing trees or doing something that a liability insurer may see as dangerous.
Absolutely. I have had that conversation with the principal of my kid's school. A few years ago, for at least a period of time, they banned all ball play at recess. Said the kids could not play with balls at recess. And it stemmed from the fact that some kids had been playing American-style football, and somebody got hurt, and they were afraid of risk of injury. And so it was just easier to say, no balls. And I went and I talked to the principal about that. Ultimately, the children were able to play with balls on the playground again, but, you know, the root cause of that is liability concerns. And that's something I think that we as societies need to start taking a look at. What the research shows is that risk is actually good for kids. Kids and adults, we learn and grow when we try and do things just beyond our capabilities. It's why kids like to climb trees. It's why they challenge themselves to jump from rock to rock, see if they can get across the stream. But in legal environment where somebody can be sued, there's not a lot of tolerance for those kinds of risks at present.
Well, we can identify with those problems because New South Wales is the second most litigious state in the world after California. So we've certainly got those sort of issues here as well. We're going to take a short break now. We're going to play a song by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and this is called Teach Your Children.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. on your dreams. The one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you. And you, of tender years, can't know the fears that you held as grew by, and so please help them with yours. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh. We're back.
And that was Teach Your Children by Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And we're speaking today with our special guest, Jennifer Fink, in Wisconsin in the US. And we're talking about some of the issues for boys who are growing up in our schools. So, Jennifer, we were talking a minute ago about the physical problems, I suppose, the conditions in which the children go out to play at recess, things like that. But there are also some problems in the teaching, in that for reading for boys, that boys are not encouraged to read for pleasure. And I suppose I'm thinking here, when I was growing up, there was a lot of prejudice against reading comics. Is that still continuing?
Mm-hmm. To some extent, although I see it improving. Increasingly, I do see teachers recognizing the fact that comics can be a portal to reading. And it's helped by the fact that comics have further evolved and grown, and there are some amazing graphic novels now. There are comic book style presentations of historical events, of classic novels, and I think that's helped some educators embrace it. There's also becoming more recognition from educators that any reading is good reading. Mm. So if you have a child who is reading a sports magazine, that counts. If you have a child who is particularly interested in any topic and they want to read a book on that, or they're looking at a newspaper or a website, that can be part of the child's reading development.
So particularly for boys, we should be looking for something that will interest them, something that will get their attention, and that they won't have to be told, go and read for half an hour.
Absolutely. Generally speaking, boys and men tend to read more nonfiction materials. They're interested in things that explain how the world works or how to do something. Oftentimes, they have a need for the knowledge, or they have a problem they need to solve, and then they'll read something. And many of them do read nonfiction for pleasure. Mm. Generally, females tend to prefer fiction, novels, short stories, things like that. And that's part of where historically there's been some issues in the classroom as well, because the teachers have been predominantly female and have pushed a lot of fiction to the exclusion of nonfiction. It's starting to change, and some of the really smart teachers are beginning to see how they can take a boy's interest in something, perhaps introduce him to some nonfiction material, and then maybe even find a fiction book that's got some of the same themes or that same topic in it.
And you just touched on perhaps another problem area, that most of the teachers, and I'm sure this is the same in Australia and the US, the teachers tend to be female rather than males. There's a male teacher deprivation which comes on top of the males in deprivation in the families. Is that also having an influence?
I believe it is, and I believe that that's a big problem, particularly because a lot of females and female teachers are included, as are mothers, as are child care providers, who are predominantly female. You know, we've never been boys. I don't know what it's like to be a boy. I don't know what it feels like. I have no way of really understanding that. For me, it took having four boys and living with them and watching them and observing them to really help me develop somewhat of an understanding of boys. Before I had boys, I did not know, did not even occur to me that somebody could be sitting at perfect rest watching TV and then randomly feel the need to get up, jump onto the couch, run to the other end, leap to the other couch, and then tackle his brother on the floor. That seemed foreign to me. My then husband was the one who said, nope, that's completely normal. It's those kinds of things where too many female teachers lack an understanding of typical boy development.
I have to confess, I don't do that now, but I guess even grown up boys can recall when they were younger, and I guess they're a bit closer to it than the females.
Yep. It's been very interesting. You know, watching my boys grow has been such a privilege, because I feel like I am getting more insight and more understanding into males and some of the issues that they face in the world, and I hope that makes me a better person as well.
And do you see the importance of mentors in that role as well?
Indeed, absolutely. You know, especially having gone through a divorce, and my boy's dad is still very involved in their lives. We share parenting time, and they split their time pretty equally between our homes. But having gone through that, one thing that I learned, it is impossible for a child to have too many people who care about him. The more people that care about a child, the better. And particularly if you have a child, a boy, who does not have a lot of men in his life, adult men, it's very helpful to connect him with adult males, that he can learn from them, and he can learn so much just by being around an adult male.
Now, you mentioned that your own marriage, you're separated from the father, and this was certainly not something you expected to do. And I think your other surprise was the benefits that come from shared parenting for the children.
Like so many people, going through the divorce, of course, there's all kinds of unpleasant feelings and anger and everything else. And at the time we separated, our oldest was about 11. Our youngest was 3. So we were very much in that, you know, raising little kids stage. I had been the at-home parent. I was homeschooling the kids at the time. He was working full-time. So very much I was in the role of parenting and making decisions and researching decisions. And yes, he was involved in those decisions, but it was typically based on information I found and I provided and we discussed. I had a very difficult time at first with the idea that this person then thought he should have equal say on things when he didn't when we were married. And keep in mind, I was also angry and I was hurting for other reasons. Fortunately, where we live, there is a presumption of shared parenting, and that's ultimately what happened. And I am convinced that the only reason that our kids are doing as well as they are doing today is because they have continued constant access to their dad. They see their dad on a regular basis. Like I said, they spend about half their time with him, about half with me. And, you know, we've now reached a point where we're much more amicable than we were at the beginning. And if he has something going on and he'd like the kids to be with him and it's, you know, my night, he says, hey, can the kids, whatever. If we don't have something planned, yes, absolutely the kids can go be with their dad. And he does the same for me.
Look, first we take Wisconsin, then we take the world. If only that message could get out to Australia and other places around the world, the benefits of shared parenting to everyone, really, to the parents and to the children, I think we'd be far advanced.
It was shocking to me to realize that this is not the norm. It's 2016, and it is not the norm. And I agree with you. I think this message needs to get out more and more. It is absolutely good for the kids, and it has been good for me as well as a person, and I know it's been good for their dad also. My kids are at their dad's right now, so I can be talking to you without dealing with children running around.
Yeah.
My career, I've had more time to devote to my career because my kids spend time with their dad, who spend some of his time parenting, and it's been good for both of us.
Yes, it can be a win-win-win situation. And we're speaking with Jennifer Fink, who is a freelance writer, and the mother of four boys and the founder of the organisation buildingboys.net. So, Jennifer, if people want to follow up on this interview, they should just go to your website?
Indeed, buildingboys.net. We also have a presence on Facebook. If you just look up Building Boys, you should be able to find us. Or you can find it through the website, and we're on Twitter as well.
And there's a wealth of information there. Just a couple that I've noticed. You've got 9 tips to boost literacy skills. You've got tips on communication. I mean, we always hear about the problems with communicating with boys. And there's one in particular that drew my eye. When a boy comes to his parent with a problem, the way to respond, you suggest, is to ask the child, what would you like from me, rather than just jumping in or ignoring it or taking some other course. But you actually ask the child, what would you like from me, and you might get a surprise.
It's funny you should mention that one today, because my oldest son came home yesterday. He had a problem, very overwhelmed, very stressed, and in that mood, he often does not like to hear suggestions. I happened to remember that bit of advice in the moment, and I said, would you like some advice? And he didn't, and I backed off.
Yes, jumping in and solving the problem may create more problems. So, look, I think that's excellent advice, and it may get your child, your boy even, to open up rather than just getting a grunt. This is a fascinating topic. We're running out of time, so we're going to go to a musical selection that you made, Jennifer. Could you tell us which song you'd like us to play and why you asked us to play it?
So I picked a song called Let Them Be Little by an American country artist, Billy Dean, because when I was in labor with my very first son, we took a Billy Dean CD to the hospital with us. And so it's inextricably linked with the beginning of parenting for me. It is a song that's asking us all to please remember that little children are only little for a short time. They're not small adults. They're children. That there is a lot of benefit towards supporting and letting them be children.
Great introduction, and there's a lot of common sense in this song. So this is Let Them Be Little by Billy Dean.
I can remember when you fit in the palm of my hand. You felt so good in it, no bigger than a minute. How it amazes me, you're changing with every blink, faster than a flower blooms. They grow up all too soon. So let them be. Cause they're only that way for a while. Give them hope, give them praise, give them love every day. Let them cry, let them giggle, let them sleep in the middle. never felt so much in one little tender touch. I live for those kisses, your prayers and your wishes. And now you're teaching me how only a child can see. Tonight, while we're on our knees, all I ask is please let them be little, 'cause they're only that way for a while. Give them hope, give them praise, give them love.
And that was Let Them Be Little by Billy Dean. And Jennifer, Adam has a question for you.
But I guess my main question is, how do other people, especially other women friends of yours, react to, the situation that you're now in and how your co-parenting's going?
That's a good question. My married friends are jealous because this arrangement means, by definition, I have certain nights and weekends when I'm not responsible for childcare. That said, I'm not so sure it was entirely positive as we were working this out. There is still a lot of prejudice in favor of moms as the good parents and dads as maybe the not-so-involved parents, and that plays out in so many levels in society that people kind of buy into that. Everybody expected that their dad would still be involved. You know, he's always been a basically decent guy, so I've been fortunate in that I felt pretty supported.
Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of you listeners, so you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. And if you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to that website, dadsontheair.com.au. And so it just remains for me now to give a special thank you to our guest from the United States, Jennifer Fink. Jennifer, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be back next week with another edition of Dads on the Air.